to Tech Conversations presented by the Florida International University Radcliffe Art and Design Incubator. And I want to welcome in today, celebrating March 2023 Women's History Month, Melissa Harmon, Senior Director of Production at South Florida PBS, WPBT and WXEL. Welcome, Melissa.
Oh, Maggie, it's so good to be here, especially as an FIU alumni. It is.
Yay, we always like our Panthers back. Pause up.
That's right, pause up. So exciting to be a part of the podcast today.
Well, thank you, Melissa. We've been getting to know you over the past several months. FIU CARTA under Dean Schreiner has established a great relationship with your general manager as well, and with Joyce Belois, right? Mm-hmm. At South Florida PBS, and we're happy that you're here today during Women's History Month to talk about, first of all, your journey. Then we're going to talk about the role of technology in production and media in general. And then we're going to talk about the season 11 of Art Loft, which is coming up very quickly, and Geographies of Trash, which you are very familiar with. I know you're a follower of Aho Sniffs Glue and the Discord. So yes. Let's kick it off, Melissa. Tell us a little bit about yourselves for our listeners, about your journey. Is being in production something that you knew you always wanted to do?
You know, I didn't. It's one of those things that just kind of presented itself to me. As a little kid, I had a little transistor radio, and I would stay up until the wee hours of the night listening to stuff. Music, just anything. And it was something that was always in the back of my mind. But, you know, when I was in high school, I didn't know that that was a something that I could go off and do in college. It really wasn't on my radar. I actually, when I first went to school, I got a basic 2-year degree at Broward College in liberal arts, because I wasn't quite sure. I went off to school to work on a degree in art history, because I had a passion for the arts and just loved it. And I promptly dropped out because I got involved in putting a college radio station on the air up at FSU. And I did that for about a semester. And then I found myself running the college radio station and not going to class. And that didn't last very long. So I came home and I got a job in radio and just started there. And the next thing I knew, I was at FIU, coming back to school to get my bachelor's degree, while I was also working in radio at WIOD and Coast 97 and Hot 105, the Cox Radio Group in Miami at the time. And I was in class there, and one of my teachers was a working professional, and he was Barry Nemkoff, the managing editor of Nightly Business Report over at Channel 2. Mm-hmm. And Barry said, you know, oh, I know you do some radio in the morning, and then you're over here finishing your, you know, coming back to get your broadcast degree. And it's like, what do you do in the afternoon? Do you want to take a writing test? His head writer was going out on maternity leave. And so I was able to come in. And once I was in the door, they didn't let me go. They kept finding projects until they locked me in to do the nightly postings to AOL.
Oh, wow.
So I would put the show every night, the pieces of the show on America Online back in the day when we used to have to dial in. And that was my first job in television. And
wow.
And then that proceeded to writing for the show and then producing for the show. And over the course of almost 20 years at Nightly Business Report, I worked my way up to being the showrunner. The senior producer, and having a couple of bureaus underneath me. We had the Miami headquarters, an anchor in Miami, an anchor in New York City, bureaus in Chicago and Washington and New York City. It was a really amazing experience to have working on this big national program right from a little warehouse district in North Miami at the old Channel 2 studios. So it was a very kind of strange dynamic to be doing this big, huge show in a little studio in North Miami, where you didn't really realize that it was having sway on Wall Street and had impact on people's personal finances. And they watched the show to learn more about the markets and how to invest and protect their futures.
Yeah, I remember that show. I think a lot of people in this area used to count on it or still want to know more about their finances.
Absolutely. They loved Paul Kangas. And, you know, Paul was just a legend in financial broadcasting. And mm-hmm. that show really launched an industry of financial television news. And Linda O'Brien, Rodney Ward, Jack Kahn, just some really amazing people did this scrappy startup, thinking of the Ratcliffe. Nightly Business Report was a scrappy startup from day one. And it was wonderful to spend 20 years there learning this industry from the inside out and growing from a kid just putting her foot in the door to work on posting transcripts, to writing, to becoming a producer and learning how to work with a really diverse staff and do so remotely long before our pandemic days. We were very much remote with the bureaus and being in Miami away from Wall Street.
Yeah, so, you know, I would say that the last decade or so, we've seen a lot of integration into media with everything that has to do with interactive and, of course, the conversation over the past few years about AR, VR, XR, everything that has to do with immersive technology. So can you talk to us a little bit about how you've seen, because we've all that are in that age range, right, that mid-age range have seen an evolution like no other generation, right? We've seen.
I think it's more of a revolution, Maggie.
Yeah, a revolution of. I remember when I was working as an intern at NBC, where I got my start here at WTVJ, now NBC6. They used to have an internal system called Basis that people. It was like a chat feature. Yeah, and I said, oh my God. And then we got email and I was like, oh, you can send people things, you know, through email. And here we are now with FaceTime and, you know, things we only saw in the Jetsons. Remember that? I feel like FaceTime really came out of the Jetsons. I always remember watching them and being like, oh, look, there's people on the, you know, on the TV talking to these other people. So talk a little bit about, you know, how technology has really impacted production in the last couple of years.
Well, it's it has certainly made it more cost efficient, easier to do. I mean, just think about it. You just prior to my time in the business, it was on film. Then it became the big Betamaxes, or not Betamaxes, but the Betacams. So I was in the Beta SP, Beta SX, going just into the first HD digital, the disc cameras that they were starting back mid to late 90s. So it's really been interesting to watch this evolve in that going from watching them do the nightly show tape to tape, and then suddenly it's now all in an Avid news cutter. And then now it's all just right on my laptop with Premiere and Final Cut, and everything just, it's super easy. I mean, I can do a quick rough cut and then suddenly hand it off to the editor and it becomes this beautiful, amazing thing. And they have all of these tools at their fingertips to really refine and make the most beautiful visual experiences. And it's interesting to me how with the technology that so many of the people I now work with have grown up with, that they think a little differently sometimes about technology and bringing things in. So I've learned a tremendous amount coming into local production in the last 10 years, coming off of the national production and coming back into local production, just different ways of storytelling and really, looking at using the DSLR cameras and getting in, being very nimble, not having to bring a massive crew with you on a field shoot. You know, you can show up with your phone or you can show up with a camera person and you know, a couple of lights and microphone, and it's very quickly, it's very inobtrusive. Everything is running on battery, so you're not running cords all over the place. And you get this, I think, greater sense of ease when someone's sitting down for an interview with you, when there's not like these massive, big, huge cameras in their face that look so scary. It just looks like the camera that your dad used more or less when you were a kid, you know? so it's not so foreign, and it's it can really make for more intimate storytelling, I guess is where I'm trying to go with that. So I think that's really amazing. And then you've got the whole this whole other world that's opening up to us online. You've got the metaverse, which we're still trying to kind of get our heads around and how that's going to work for a traditional public media television-based group. We are certainly doing much more of our programming focused on digital first, and that's changing how we do storytelling, looking at what works and what doesn't work on the different social platforms, trying to make sure that we're bringing both younger and older viewers along into the future together. So there's a lot of things to think about. But for me, if you have gone and kind of learned that work of storytelling and listening and the art of talking to someone in an interview, I think those skills are going to translate no matter what the technical format is going to be. And that's really important. That's where an FIU comes into play. It really is. Doing that hands-on work in school, getting to experiment, getting to play, getting the opportunity to fail fast and often, with the support of professors and being in that kind of situation, it's invaluable.
So, I hear that TV stations are getting rid of the helicopters and replacing them with drones. So that just comes to show you how far we've come. When the helicopter used to be like the, it was like the main frame of everything, send the helicopter, the traffic with the helicopter, mm-hmm. There's a crash, the helicopter, but now it's the drones because they're much easier to manage, I guess.
Well, and with some of our lifestyle programs, when we're working on these, you don't want to do them without a drone. How can you not have those gorgeous beauty shots that the drone
gives
you in South Florida? I mean, especially here in South Florida, our environment is sort of that second character in all of our productions. It's always there. We've got such richness in our light and in our backgrounds and in the places that we go to visit.
So let's shift gears because we have some mm-hmm. exciting projects with you guys coming up that I want to get to. First of all, sure. Congratulations on season 11 of Art Loft.
Thank you. Amazing. It has been a blast. season 11 is so much fun. We have done some really great programs. We've got a few more left. Tuesday nights at 7:30 on South Florida PBS Channel 2 and 5:30 Thursday afternoon on Channel 42 in the Palm Beaches, WXEL. My little plug. But we've done some great conversations this season. One of my favorites so far was a profile of the Rafael Soriano Foundation, the legendary Cuban-American artist who lived right here in Miami. His daughter is really building an amazing foundation for study for her father's works. And she's taking into account technology and all of those things as she's building forward, So it was kind of neat to hear what went into building this archive and foundation as far as the technical side of it to me. So that was a great story. Lots of great profiles. And then, of course, the one that brought us to your doorstep at the Radcliffe, Ahol Sniffs Glue. And if you don't know him, you know his artwork. You know the eyeball that's all over Miami. Awesome street artist, fine artist. And the Geographies of Trash Project is just not really like anything I've ever seen.
I think all of us are mesmerized by the fact of what a phenomenon it has become. And like I like to call it, I like to take credit for this. I call it the modern day digital scavenger hunt because he teases where these, trash to treasure pieces are. You have to guess the location, pick it up, but he rewards his followers. He does NFTs and he does, call outs. We had one at the Radcliffe recently, where Geographies of Trash was recognized with a proclamation by the city of North Miami Beach by Commissioner Daniela Jean, mm-hmm. proclaiming a day of Geographies of Trash, which we're very proud and excited to feature. And I think you were part of that. I think you guys recorded some of that of what took place during that proclamation. So before we talk about geographies of trash and what particularly called your attention to it, talk about how Art Loft has evolved, you know, because, you know, the show probably started one way and has taken a different direction. So if you could take us through
Absolutely. So the show goes back to around 2012. And our head of programming at the time, Neil Hecker, just a longtime public television guy who just had big love of the arts, and had grown up in New York City, and just was always, from the time he could get on the subway and ride by himself as a kid, always going to art events, being at openings, music, film, visual arts, anything, you know, he could get to. And so he got to work on an idea and came up with a program documenting the arts, contemporary arts, here in South Florida. And when Art Loft began, its history was as that of a Knight Foundation grant. So Neil worked with the Knight Foundation to launch Art Loft, and it was once a week, half hour. There were, they filmed all week long, got this thing out every week, which was a real hustle. And it was right when the DSLR cameras came into play. So 2012, 2013, when we were just starting to bring those into newsrooms and into production facilities and starting to really take those seriously in the production world. And so he had this young team of shooters and producers, and was, but mostly it was Neil himself running around and doing the filming, hitting art exhibits, openings, musical events, things like that. So then it evolved. It went like that, the 52 weeks a year for a couple of years. Then we evolved into having a host. And then a couple of, I came into play in 2016. The show had some rotating hosts going on at the time. We had Jumani Anandi from Anandi Gallery, Anandi Contemporary in Little Haiti. Lolo Reskin from Sweat Records came in and worked with us during the season. It was a lot of fun. And for the last couple of years, we've been without a host. The show is really focused specifically on the artists, the arts organizations, and what's going on. It allows them to tell their story in the first person. There's no reporter track or anything on these stories. It is their stories. And we really specialize in focusing on our South Florida audience. We do bring in a couple of national stories from some of our partner stations across the country and work those in there. But you'll see things from the Keys all the way up to the Palm Beaches. And we try to really look at some of the unusual and fun and exciting contemporary art that's happening in South Florida.
Wow, that's incredible. I mean, what a staple to have a show like that in our community, which of course, you know, is very colorful. South Florida now serves as a window to many artists and many other, you know, community events that revolve around art. So to have a staple like that, a show that has been long running, is amazing.
Well, it's a wonderful honor to be able to do this, especially as we've seen the South Florida art community evolve. One of my favorite stories, and I've been very touched and saddened by her passing, was Myra Lair, a longtime Miami Beach artist, living, working, supporting artists over on Miami Beach for the last 60 years. And she just passed away a few weeks ago. But we were able to cover her. She did more in her later years with her artwork. I think her quote was, "My work just keeps getting bigger the smaller I get." And she's just such a powerhouse. But her work, much like David's, A Hole Sniffs Glue, focused on the environment and had that undercurrent of what happens next and what can I do as an artist to make a difference. And so that's something that's really... The geographies of trash is it has really captured my attention, like something, you know, like I never expected. I have to say that.
Yeah, I mean, let's talk about geographies of trash. So let me give you the brief background for those listeners that may not know the background with geographies of trash. So Eho Sniffs Glue, David Anasagasti, which is, you know, born in Hialeah, Florida. He came, you know, he was introduced to the Radcliffe through someone else, a friend of Dr. Kolesinski's, and he became an entrepreneurial resident. And he had this idea of this digital scavenger hunt that he has. And in a collaboration with the Wolfsonian Public Humanities Lab and the Radcliffe, housed under CARTA, of course, under the guidance of Dean Schreiner, you know, Dr. Kolesinski and the group at the Wolfsonian, you know, it's a collaboration where there's an archival process to this geographies of trash, which is really done by the Wolfsonian, that they document the stories of these people that have picked up these pieces that have been tagged by Aho Sniffs Glue. And then we at the Radcliffe, we are incubating, you know, not only the continuation of this discord and this project, but also the entrepreneurial residency of David Anasagasti. So I believe that, you know, I was talking to Joyce at South Florida PBS. She brought you into the conversation. And as I was pitching to you guys ideas about iStar and geographies of trash, Melissa, you said, I know who Aho Sniffs Glue is. And I was floored by that. I didn't know you were a follower of the Discord.
Well, you know, I knew of him, but at the time I didn't really know about the trash project and the Discord. And so yes. I had a conversation with him on the phone. Then I came out to the Radcliffe. I met him. I met several of the Discord members, the sharks, the big collectors, the ones who yes. are out there every day chasing trash. So it's, you know, I sound like a nut when I talk about it because I get excited about it. It's so much fun. I thought this was going to be an art scavenger hunt with some, you know, graffiti artist guy. I didn't know it was going to be something that would change my daily mental health, Maggie.
Yes,
and that's something that I didn't expect. And it really has surprised me, the levels and the layers, the trash lasagna, as he calls it. You've got so much going on there, you know, the physical health stuff of getting out on a bicycle and riding, the saving the environment by pulling and tagging over 700, almost 800 pieces of individual pieces of art that have been left over, I think, just 2 years on the streets for people to find. Over 305 users hit that on 305 day. Mm-hmm. Individual holders of NFTs. So there's all this stuff going on with this project, and you get the ability to learn about the digital side of the art world. That's one thing that we as a program had been kind of steering clear of, the NFT world, because it's still something that is shaking out, much like alternative currencies and things like that. It's that figuring out how it works, what it means in the real world, how do people understand what it is, and getting from this project that they look at the NFT as sort of that certificate of authentication on the art piece that you found in the wild, and sort of being able to wrap my head around it. Oh, okay, I get it now. It's that little official digital piece of code that says, this is a real thing. This artist is saying, yes, I did this piece of work and I'm signing it. It's the real deal. You can feel safe in knowing that I did this. And so all of that is really encompassed in this funny little goofy experience where you can check in daily on the Discord and say, good morning, Biscayne World. And everybody tags you with a little emoji with cafecito or a pastelito and, you know, a smiley face or something. And it's a lot of fun. The bike riding alone has, joining that has changed my life, getting back on a bike and going out and riding on my own, riding with friends that I've met through the Discord. It's really been something. And it brings together all kinds of people. You would never know all the different types of folks that are on the Discord and kind of members, so. It's been a really wild experience. And I've been covering it, trying to put this story together on it. So I'm really excited to share the story at the end of this month. We'll be airing that episode on March 28th.
March 28th, yeah. I want to touch upon, you know, what you said about the pillars it represents specifically. It represents biking, it represents community, it represents upcycle, it represents, you know, the environment, but it also represents mental health. It was born out of the need also to get out during a time of darkness and closure with the pandemic.
Absolutely.
Do you think that something like that can help people overcome whatever fears they have or problems they may be going through?
The thing that was so interesting to me was that first day that I came to the Ratcliffe, David showed up. He reached out to the Discord, I guess, and invited folks to come and bring some pieces and talk mm-hmm. about their experience with it. For me to walk into a room with six guys ranging in age from about 22 to about 50, and have them all talk to me and be almost in tears talking about what this project means to them and means to their daily mental health, the support that they get from, the encouragement that they get from the other members. They can post up in there that, hey, man, it's been a long day, and people will say, hey, get out there, go take a walk, get outside, breathe some fresh air. It's gonna be better tomorrow. You know, they've tried to lift each other up and raise each other up and share fun and good times. It's really super positive kind of atmosphere. And I just, you know, I never would have thought that me as a middle-aged, I'm being very generous with that term.
You think that you would be in a lady, Discord riding bike? Is that what it is?
Riding bikes with 25-year-olds, exactly. You know, how that was going to happen, I don't know. But it is the most fun ever. and it hypes me up all the time. And I find myself using phrases like hype me up and my dog and all of these things. It's very funny. And I'm enjoying the joy I get from it.
So, you know, the episode that's specific to Geographies of Trash airs on Art Loft on South Florida PBS March 28th, correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yes. So as we end the podcast, Melissa, which has been an honor having someone of your stature here, specifically, you know, as we celebrate women across every industry, across the world, and, you know, there's still, we've come so far. You know, I had this conversation with somebody earlier in last week. I said, you know, we've come so far in 100 years, you know, women are able to vote. You know, we are CEOs of companies. Mm-hmm. We are in the military. We've gone to space. I know that the big plans NASA has for putting women on the moon as well. The Artemis program. I'm a big space lover. So the first podcast we ever launched was about the rover and Mars. So that tells you a lot about the way that my brain works. And, you know, having someone like you that's been around for so long is a true honor to have here on the podcast, and that you've been able to identify something like Geographies of Trash with so many different pillars. But one of the big pillars is also what you said. It's about, you know, people encouraging one another and mental health. And, you know, we also have to acknowledge that while we are in 2023, there are still, you know, parts of the world that don't let women have as many freedoms as the ones we take for granted every day, right? That we're able to dress this way, and that we're able to go to school, and that we are professionals, and that we can walk outside at any time of the day. And these are things that we take for granted. And Melissa, and you and I that have been in the media for so long, we see all types of stories. We talk to people from all walks of life. We've seen a lot of different things. I think that our mission continues to be to push for those women that still do not have the rights that we enjoy today, and to give a voice to those that don't have a voice.
I agree. You know, when I look at our coverage and what we do at South Florida PBS, I really always try to focus on groups that maybe don't normally get representation, that don't have a voice in commercial television. You know, we try to make sure that we're here reflecting all of our neighbors, And that's just so important to me to make sure that we're leading with kindness and really trying to share positive stories. There's so much that you could watch every night on the nightly news on any channel in South Florida or any cable channel that is just gonna wear you down listening to it. So I would rather look at stories that are talking about beautiful art, exciting projects that are happening that you can get involved with, things that will make your life here in South Florida better. Resources in our public affairs programming. I think it's so important to look at, you know, how different groups are trying to respond to these major problems that we have, like housing crisis and things like that. So it's the finding the groups that are on the ground really doing the work and putting in that effort to help people move forward in their lives and not necessarily waiting to get celebrated because they're doing a great thing. So I want to work on really highlighting those underserved, you know, the stories of people who are doing the hard work in the community, and people who are doing neat things like bringing people together in a surprising spirit of mental health, like the Geographies of Trash.
Excellent. So we always end this podcast talking about, you know, inspiration and definitely aspirational to, you know, entrepreneurs, people seeking to be in every intersection of tech. You know, this podcast is called Tech Conversations, but we usually do get out a little bit about through every industry. And we talk to a lot of people in our four seasons. We've talked to people from NASA, from the White House, Emilio Estefan, authors, newsmakers, activists, producers like yourself. We've had people from FIU as well. You know, we had then before he became president, we had, you know, current president Jessel. We had, you know, our interim provost, which is now a provost, Dr. Behar. We had Dr. Ortiz, who heads up. He is our leader at the Biscayne Bay campus. So we've had a lot of different conversations about a lot of different things. So Melissa, any parting words to anyone wanting to get into media right now? Any advice that has been helpful to you? I know you and I were talking just before we started recording that the best things that happen to us in life are those that go unplanned, right? So if you could leave with some parting words.
Well, I think if you really wanna push forward in the media, learn how to listen, really, learn how to put your ego aside and listen. It will serve you so well in all aspects of what you do, especially in interviews when you sit down to have a conversation with someone. If you just take that moment to remember, excuse me, I'm coughing a little here. Take that moment to remember that this person has taken time out of their day to sit with you and to talk to you and share their story with you. And that's a real honor. And I can't stress enough to people what an honor it is to be able to do a job like this. It's not something that everybody gets the opportunity to do. And I'm grateful every day that I get to go out and meet the people in our community. I get to work with a really neat team of videographers and editors and other producers to tell stories about all these things that interest me across South Florida. It's a really great opportunity. So I think storytelling and being able to listen and focus on what someone is telling you and not what questions you want to ask.
Excellent, Melissa. That's great advice. You know, I think as people that interview and go after stories, it's always important to listen and to observe and to see where that angle is that you're going to be informing the community. You know, what makes this special? Why should people know about this? Why should they be informed about it? What makes it interesting? And I think that, you know, again, congratulations on the next upcoming season of Art Loft and everything else. I know we talked about right after the podcast, we both said, oh, we're going to get on our bikes and take our pets out.
Because it's such a beautiful day.
It's such a beautiful day in South Florida. So Melissa, thank you so much for giving Tech Conversations right here at the Florida International University Radcliffe Art and Design Incubator the opportunity to have a little chat with you today. and discover a little more about, you know, production and technology and geographies of trash. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Maggie. It's my pleasure.
Pause. Thank you. Have a great evening.
Bye-bye.